Chapter 8 If Snorri's restaurant in Reykjavik could be picked up and placed down in any of the Epicurean distinguished cities of the world, it would be instantly greeted with respectful acclaim. Its one great hall, with open kitchen and earthen ovens only a few feet from the dining area, was designed in the Viking tradition. Richly paneled walls and intricately carved doors and beams provided the perfect atmosphere for a leisurely yet elegant dinner. The menu selection was created to reward even the most finicky gourmet, and along one entire wall stood a buffet table with over 200 different native dishes. Pitt surveyed the crowded dining hall. The tables were filled with laughing, talkative Icelanders and their svelte, lovely women. He was standing there, his eyes taking in the scene, his nostrils basking in the rich food smells, when the maitre d' came up and spoke in Icelandic. Pitt shook his head and pointed at Admiral Sandecker and T.D. Royal, comfortably ensconced at a table near the bar. He made his way over to them. Sandecker waved Pitt to a chair opposite T.D. and hailed a passing waiter in the same motion. "You're 10 minutes late." "Sorry," Pitt said. "I took a walk in the Tjarnargarder Gardens and did a little sightseeing." "Looks like you found yourself a swinging men's shop," T.D. remarked admiringly. Her wise brown eyes roved over his wool turtleneck sweater, belted corduroy jacket, and plaid slacks. "I grew tired of wearing hand-me-downs," he said, smiling. Sandecker looked up at the waiter. "Two more of the same," he said. "What will you have, Dirk?" "What are you and T.D. drinking?" "Holland gin. Schnapps, if you prefer. It seems to be big with the natives." Pitt twisted his mouth. "No, thanks. I'll stick with my old standby, Cutty Rocks." The waiter nodded and left. "Where is this exciting creature I've heard so much about?" Pitt asked. "Miss Fury should be along any minute," Sandecker replied. "Just before we were attacked, Honeywell said that Fury's sister was a missionary in New Guinea." "Yes, little else is known about her. In fact, few people knew she even existed until Fury's will named her sole beneficiary. Then she appeared at Fury Limited one day and took the reins as smoothly as if she had built the empire herself. Don't get any ideas in that bedroom mind of yours. She's shrewd, just as shrewd as her brother was." "Then why bother with the introductions? You say hands-off, yet I get the distinct impression that I'm supposed to play Prince Charming. Get cozy, but not too cozy. You've chosen the wrong man, Admiral. I'm the first to admit my looks hardly put me in the Rock Hudson-Paul Newman class, but I have a nasty habit when it comes to pursuing skirts. I'm picky. I'm not geared to assault every girl that comes into sight, especially one who is the spitting image of her brother, spent half her life as a missionary, and runs a giant corporation with a mason chain. Sorry, Admiral, Miss Fury hardly sounds like my type." "I think it's disgusting," T.D. said disapprovingly, the eyebrows arched above the huge brown eyes. "Numa is supposed to be dedicated to scientific research of the oceans. None of this talk sounds very scientific to me." Sandecker threw her an admonishing stare, a facial display that he was unquestionably a master at projecting. Secretaries should be seen and not heard. T.D. was saved from further reprimand by the timely arrival of the waiter with the drinks. He set them on the table with an accomplished motion and then left. Sandecker watched until the waiter was several tables away before he turned back to Pitt. "Nearly 40% of NUMA's projects are designed and planned around mining the seafloor. Russia leads us by a wide margin in surface programs. The science of her fishing fleet far surpasses anything we've got. But she lags badly in deep submersibles, a damned vital piece of equipment for undersea mining. This is our strong point. We want to maintain this advantage. Our country has the resources, but Fury Limited has the technical knowledge. With Christian Fury, we had a good, close working association. Now that he's only a memory, I don't care to see the results of our efforts lost just when our programs are on the verge of hitting pay dirt. I've talked to Miss Fury. All of a sudden, she's very noncommittal. Says she has decided to reevaluate her firm's programs with our country." "You said she's shrewd," Pitt said. "Maybe she's holding out to the highest bidder. There's nothing in the book that says she has to be as magnanimous as her brother." "Damn it," Sandecker said irritably. "Anything is possible. Maybe she hates Americans." "She's not alone." "If so, there must be a reason, and we've got to find it." "Enter Dirk Pitt, stage left." "Precisely, but no hanky-panky. I'm taking you off the Pacific Ocean Lab project definitely and putting you on this one. Forget playing secret agent while you're at it. Leave the intrigue and the dead bodies to the National Intelligence Agency. You're to act in your official capacity as Special Projects Director for NUMA. No more, no less. If you stumble onto any information that might lead to the people who killed Fury, Honeywell, and Matagic, you're to pass it on. Pass it on to whom? Sandecker shrugged. I don't know. The NIA didn't see fit to tell me before I left Washington. Great, I'll take out a full-page ad in the local newspaper, Pitt said sourly. I don't recommend it, Sandecker said. He took a long swallow from his glass and made a wry face. God, what do they see in this stuff? He took another swallow from a glass of water. I have to be in Washington the day after tomorrow. That gives me enough time to smooth the way for you. With, Miss Fury? With Fury Limited. I've arranged an exchange program. I'm taking one of their top engineers with me to the States to observe and study our techniques while you're to stay here and report on theirs. Your primary job will be to restore the close relationship we once enjoyed with the Fury's management. If this Fury broad has been so cool toward you and NUMA, why did she consent to meet us tonight? Out of courtesy. Dr. Honeywell and her brother were good friends. His death and the fact that you made a gallant but losing attempt to save his life played on her feminine emotions. In short, she insisted on meeting you. She's beginning to sound like a cross between Catherine the Great and Amy Semple McPherson, T.D. said sarcastically. I can't wait to meet my new boss face to face, Pitt said. Sandecker nodded. You can in precisely 5 seconds. She just walked in. Pitt turned, and so did every other male head in the restaurant. She stood in the foyer very tall and very blonde, like a fantasy of womanly perfection. Incredibly beautiful, as if caught in the perfect pose by the lens of a fashion photographer's camera. Her statuesque figure was encased in a long, violet-colored dress of velvet with peasant embroidery on the sleeves and hem. Now she caught Sandecker's wave, and she walked over to the table, moving with a graceful, flowing motion that possessed all the suppleness of a ballerina and more than the suggestion of a natural athlete. By this time, all the women in the restaurant were eyeing her with instinctive envy. Pitt pushed back his chair and rose and studied her face as she approached. It was her tan that intrigued him. The delicately clear tanned complexion somehow seemed foreign to an Icelandic woman, even one who spent a good portion of her life in the backcountry of New Guinea. The total effect was striking. The blonde hair, a carefree casual look with a controlled, tousled effect, the deep violet eyes that matched the color of her dress. She was hardly what Pitt had imagined, to say the least. My dear Miss Fury, I'm honored that you could dine with us. Admiral Sandecker took her hand and kissed it. Then he turned to Teedy, who wore a mask of friendliness. May I introduce my secretary, Miss Teedy Royal? The two women exchanged polite but typically cool feminine greetings. Then Sandecker turned to Pitt. And this is Major Dirk Pitt, the real driving force behind my agency's projects.
So this is the brave gentleman you've told me so much about, Admiral. Her voice came across husky and terribly sexy. I am deeply sorry for the tragic loss of Dr. Honeywell. My brother thought very highly of him.
We're sorry too, Pitt said. There was a pause while they looked at each other, Kirsty Fury with a touch of speculation in her eyes, and with what might have been more than friendly interest, Pitt with analytical male appraisal. He was the first to break the silence. If I sit here staring, Miss Fury, it's because Admiral Sandecker failed to warn me that the head of Fury Limited had such mystic eyes.
I have been paid compliments by men before, Major Pitt, but you are the first to describe my eyes as mystic.
Purely academic, Pitt said, the eyes are doors to the secrets a person hides from within.
And what deep, dark shadows do you see lurking within my soul?
Pitt laughed. A gentleman never reveals a lady's private thoughts. He offered her a cigarette, but she shook her head. Seriously, our eyes have something in common.
Miss Fury's eyes are deep blue, T.D. said. Yours are green. What could they possibly have in common?
Miss Fury's eyes, like mine, have rays that spread from the pupil into the iris, Pitt said. They're sometimes called flashes. He paused to light a cigarette. I have it from the best authority. Flashes are a sign of psychic powers.
"Are you clairvoyant?" Kirsty asked.
"I admit to being a failure," Pitt replied. "I always lose at poker because I have yet to read my opponent's cards or mind. How about you, Miss Fury? Can you see into the future?"
He saw a fleeting shadow across her eyes. "I know my destiny, therefore I can control it."
Pitt's dark, grinning features gave nothing away as he began to enter into the spirit of the eternal chase. He leaned across the table until only a few inches separated their eyes. Green stared into violet.
"I take it you usually expect to get what you want?"
"Yes."
Her answer came without an instant's hesitation.
"Then suppose I told you that under no circumstances would I ever attempt to make love to you."
"I know the sort of thing you expect me to say, Major."
An expression of defiant determination animated her face.
"But if I really desired you and demanded your attention, I would be playing into your hands, literally. No, I seldom bother with something I do not want. I shall totally ignore your empty rejection."
Pitt acted as if he were unconscious of any static in the atmosphere.
"Why, Miss Fury, I hardly figured you for a cop-out artist."
She looked blank.
"A cop-out artist? That's American for chicken," T.D. said with a razor-sharp tongue coated with several layers of sugar.
Admiral Sandecker cleared his throat. He was thinking of what might happen if this trend in the conversation were to continue.
"I see no reason for an old man to sit here and listen to all this light-hearted talk while he's starving, particularly when several square yards of delicious-looking food sits begging for attention only 10 feet away."
"Please allow me to introduce you to our native buffet dishes," Kirsty said. "I trust Major Pitt's appetite for food is more regulated than his appetite for sex."
"Touché," Pitt laughed. He rose and pulled back Kirsty's chair. "From this moment forward, my every move will be with moderation." The varieties of fish seemed endless. Pitt counted over 20 different dishes of salmon and nearly 15 of cod alone. They each returned with their plates heaped with near over-the-rim helpings.
"I see you've taken a fancy to our cured shark meat, Major."
Kirsty's eyes were smiling. "I've heard a great deal about the processing," Pitt said, "and now at last I have a chance to try it." The smile in her lovely eyes turned to a flicker of surprise as he ate several slices.
"Are you sure you're aware of how we prepare it?"
"Of course," he answered. "The species of shark found in colder waters can't be eaten fresh, so you slice it in strips and bury it in beach sand for 26 days and then cure it in the wind."
"You're eating it raw, you know," Kirsty persisted.
"Is there any other way?" Pitt said as he forked another slice into his mouth.
"Don't waste your time trying to shock him, Miss Fury." Sandecker cast a distasteful eye at the shark meat. "Dirk's hobby is gourmet cooking. His specialty is fish, and he is an expert on international seafood preparation."
"Actually, it's quite good," Pitt managed between mouthfuls. "However, I do think the Malaysian version has a better flavor. They cure the shark meat wrapped in a seaweed called echidna. This gives it a slightly sweeter taste than the Icelandic delicacy."
"Americans usually order steak or chicken," Kirsty said. "You are the first I have known who prefers fish."
"Not entirely," Pitt said. "Like most of my countrymen, my favorite standby is still a good double hamburger with French fries and a chocolate malt."
Kirsty looked at Pitt and smiled.
"I am beginning to think that you are blessed with an iron stomach."
Pitt shrugged. "I have an uncle who is San Francisco's leading bon vivant. In my own small way, I'm trying to follow in his footsteps." The rest of the meal was eaten with a minimum of small talk, everyone relaxed and comfortable in the atmosphere of friendliness and good food. 2 hours later, during a strawberry and ice cream flambé, especially concocted by Pitt and an agreeable chef, Kirsty began to make apologies for an early departure.
"I hope you will not think me rude, Admiral Sandecker, but I am afraid I must leave you, Miss Royal, and Major Pitt very shortly. My fiancé has insisted on taking me to a poetry reading tonight, and since I am only a woman, it is difficult to refuse his wishes."
She gave T.D. a soft female look of understanding.
"I'm sure Miss Royal can appreciate my situation."
T.D. instantly grasped the romantic inference.
"I envy you, Miss Fury. A fiancé who loves poetry is a rare catch."
Admiral Sandecker beamed a felicitating smile.
"My sincerest wishes for your happiness, Miss Fury. I had no idea you were engaged. Who is the lucky man?"
The Admiral held his composure exceedingly well, Pitt thought. He knew the old man was stunned right down to his shoe soles. This new development would call for a different set of ground rules. Already Pitt found himself wondering what the competition was like.
Rondheim. Oscar Rondheim, Kirsty announced. My brother introduced us in a letter. Oscar and I exchanged pictures and corresponded for 2 years before we finally met.
Sandecker stared at her. Wait a minute, he said slowly. I think I know of him. Isn't he the one who owns an international chain of canneries? Rondheim Industries? A fishing fleet the size of Spain's navy? Or am I thinking of some other Rondheim?
No, that's right, Kirsty said. His executive offices are right here in Reykjavik.
The fishing boats, painted blue, flying a red flag with an albatross, Pitt inquired. Kirsty nodded.
The albatross is Oscar's good luck symbol. Do you know his boats?
I've had occasion to fly over them, Pitt said. Of course Pitt knew the boats and their symbol. So did every fisherman of every country north of the 40th parallel. Rondheim's fishing fleets were notorious for wiping out fishing grounds, almost to the verge of extinction, robbing the nets of the other fishermen, and dropping their own distinctive red-dyed nets inside the territorial boundaries of other countries. The Rondheim albatross carried as much respect as the Nazi swastika. A merger between Fury Limited and Rondheim Industries would result in a most powerful empire, Sandecker said slowly, almost as if he were weighing the consequences. Pitt's mind was running along the same channels. Suddenly his train of thought was broken when Kirsty waved her hand.
There he is, there.
They turned and followed Kirsty's gaze to a tall, snow-haired, distinguished-looking figure vigorously stepping toward them. He was fairly young, late 30s, his face strong and lined by years of ocean gales and salt air. The eyes were cool blue-gray above a strong, narrow nose and a mouth that looked good-naturedly warm, though Pitt mused, rightly, that it could quickly straighten and harden to an aggressive line during business hours. Pitt mentally wrote him down as a sharp and cunning opponent. He made a note never to turn his back to him. Rondheim stopped before the table, his even white teeth flashing in a seemingly cordial smile.
Kirsty, darling, how delightful you look tonight.
Then he affectionately embraced her. Pitt waited to see where the blue-gray eyes would move to next, to himself or the Admiral. He guessed wrong. Rondheim turned to Tidy.
Ah, and who is this lovely young lady?
Admiral Sandecker's secretary, Miss Tidy Royal, Kirsty said. May I present Oscar Rondheim?
Miss Royal? He made a slight bow.
I am charmed by such interesting eyes.
Pitt had to hold his napkin to his mouth to muffle the laughter.
I think this is where I came in.
Tidy began to giggle, and Sandecker joined in with a hearty laugh that turned heads at the nearby tables. Pitt kept his eyes on Kirsty. He was intrigued by a frightened, almost panicky expression that flickered across her face before she forced a thin smile and went along with the surrounding mirth. Rondheim didn't go along with it at all. He stood there, his eyes staring blankly in confusion and his mouth pressed tightly together in anger. One didn't need to be a mind reader to see that he wasn't in the habit of being laughed at.
"I said something humorous," he asked.
"This seems to be the night for complimenting women on their eyes," Pitt said. Kirsty explained to Rondheim and then hurriedly introduced Sandecker.
"It is indeed a pleasure to meet you, Admiral."
The cool look was back in Rondheim's eyes. "Your reputation as a mariner and oceanographer is widely known throughout seafaring circles."
"Your reputation is also widely known throughout seafaring circles, Mr. Rondheim."
The Admiral shook Rondheim's hand and turned to Pitt.
"Major Dirk Pitt, my special projects director."
Rondheim paused a moment, making a coldly professional assessment of the man standing before him before he extended his hand.
"Major Pitt, how do you do?"
Pitt gritted his teeth as Rondheim's hand closed like a vice. Pitt fought a desire to squeeze back. Instead, he let his hand go limp in a dead fish grip.
"Good heavens, Mr. Rondheim, you're a very strong man."
"I'm sorry, Major." Rondheim winced with surprised disgust and jerked his hand back as though he had been shocked by an electrical circuit. "The men who work for me are a rugged breed and have to be treated as such. When I am off the deck of a fishing boat, I sometimes forget to act like a gentleman of the land."
Goodness, Mr. Rondheim, you needn't apologize. I admire virile men. Pitt held up his hand and wiggled his fingers. No harm done as long as I can still wield a brush.
Do you paint, Major? Kirsty asked.
Yes, landscapes mostly. I also enjoy doing floral still lifes. There is something about flowers that inspires the soul, don't you think? Kirsty looked at Pitt curiously.
I would love to see your work sometime.
Unfortunately, all of my canvases are in Washington. However, I'd be delighted to present you with my impressions of Iceland while I'm here. Pitt held a finger against his lips in a feminine gesture.
Watercolors. Yes, that's it.
I'll do a series of watercolors. Perhaps you can hang them in your office.
You are very kind, but I could not accept.
Nonsense, Pitt interrupted. Your coastline is magnificent. I'm simply dying to see if I can capture its contrasting forces of sea and rock meeting one another in a natural eruption of light and color.
Kirsty smiled politely.
If you insist, but you must permit me to do something for you in return.
I ask one favor, a boat.
To do your shoreline justice, I must sketch it from the sea. Nothing fancy, any small cruiser will do.
See my dockmaster, Major. He will have a cruiser ready for you.
She hesitated a moment as Rondheim loomed up and placed his hand on her neck and shoulder.
Our boats are moored at Pier 12.
Come, darling, Rondheim said, white-teethed and softly. Max is reading his new anthology tonight. We must not be late. His hand tightened, and she closed her eyes. I hope you good people will excuse us.
Yes, of course, Sandecker said. It's been a very enjoyable 2 hours, Miss Fury. Thank you for joining us.
Before anyone could say anything further, Rondheim hooked his hand through Kirsty's arm and led her from the dining room. As soon as they passed beyond the door, Sandecker threw his napkin down on the table.
Okay, Dirk, suppose you explain your little act.
What little act? Pitt asked innocently.
I admire virile men, Sandecker mimicked. That goddamned homo act, that's what I mean. All that was missing was the lisp.
Pitt leaned forward, elbows on the table, his face dead serious. There are situations that offer a definite advantage in being underestimated. This is one of them.
Rondheim?
Exactly. He's your reason behind Fury's sudden reluctance to cooperate with the United States and Numa. The man is no dummy. Once he marries Kirsty Fury, control of two of the largest privately owned corporations in the world will come under one roof. The possibilities are immense. Iceland and its government are too small, too dependent on the future Fury-Rondheim cartel for its economy to offer even a token resistance against a highly financed takeover. Then, with the right strategy, the Faroe Islands and Greenland giving Rondheim virtual control over the North Atlantic. After that, one can only guess in which directions his ambitions lie.
Sandecker shook his head. You're assuming too much. Kirsty Fury would never go along with an international power play.
She will have no choice in the matter, Pitt said. In marriage, the spoils go to the dominant personality.
A woman in love is blind, is that it?
No, Pitt answered. I don't think this is a match based on love.
Now you're an expert on affairs of the heart, Sandecker said sarcastically.
No contest, Pitt said, grinning. But we are fortunate in having an expert in our midst who has a built-in natural intuition for such things. He turned to Teedy. Care to give us a feminine opinion, dear heart?
Teedy nodded.
She was terrified of him.
Sandecker looked at her speculatively.
What do you mean by that?
Just what I said, Teedy said firmly. Miss Fury was scared to death of Mr. Rondheim. Didn't you see how he clutched her neck? I guarantee that she'll be wearing high collars for the next week until the bruises disappear.
Are you sure you're not imagining or exaggerating?
Teedy shook her head.
It was all she could do to keep from screaming.
Sandecker's eyes were suddenly full of hostility.
That rotten son of a bitch.
He gazed at Pitt steadily.
Did you catch it?
Yes.
This increased Sandecker's anger.
Then why in hell didn't you stop it?
I couldn't, Pitt said. I would have had to step out of character. Rondheim has every reason to think I'm a faggot. I want him to go right on thinking that.
I'd like to think you have a hazy idea of what you're doing, Sandecker said grimly. However, I'm afraid you backed yourself into a corner with that crap about being an artist. I know for a fact that you can't draw a straight line. Natural eruption of light, my God!
I don't have to. Teedee will handle that little chore for me. I've seen samples of her work. It's quite good.
I do abstracts, Teedee said, a pained look on her pretty face. I've never tried a true-life seascape.
Fake it, Pitt said briskly. Do an abstract seascape. We're not out to impress the head curator at the Louvre.
But I have no supplies, Teedee whined. Besides, the Admiral and I are leaving for Washington the day after tomorrow.
Your flight has just been cancelled.
Pitt turned to Sandecker.
Right, Admiral?
Sandecker folded his hands and mulled for a few moments. In view of what we've learned in the last 5 minutes, I think it best if I hang around for a few days.
The change of climate will do you good, Pitt said. You might even get in a fishing trip.
Sandecker studied Pitt's face.
Fairy queen imitations, painting classes, fishing expeditions. Would you humor an old man and tell me what's running through that agile mind of yours?
Pitt picked up a glass of water and swilled the lucid contents.
A black airplane, he said quietly.
A black airplane resting beneath a watery death shroud.